outside. We couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Fans, and welcome back to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. This is episode number 17. Welcome to February, Quinn. It's February 6th, 2017. How you doing today, Michael?
How you doing?
How you doing?
February already.
February. Good Super Bowl, Mike?
Yeah, I guess so.
Giants weren't in, so who cares,
yeah,
basically.
I mean, yeah, that's for us. We're pretty much out of it at that point.
Good wings, though.
Yeah.
Had some good wings last night.
Hot wings.
I like a good hot wing.
Yeah, I like hot wings when I watch my wrestling, too.
You know what? Speaking of hot, we've got some hot retro wrestling talk for you, folks.
Oh, yes,
gonna
we do.
It's going to be a great show. We're going to talk about the world of retro wrestling. You know, Quinn, we actually have 40 years of combined fandom. Over 40 years.
Do we now?
We have a lot of years.
So now that it's 2017, I'd asked you this before, shouldn't it really be 42 years?
It's like
one in one.
We have over 42 years of combined fandom. How
Let's
about that?
Let's just say that from now on.
We'll
have to change the show notes from going forward.
That's fine. Folks, we're happy to be back with you this week, starting off the month with some great retro wrestling talk. Want to remind you, if you're not at the Place to Be Nation, because we're there. If you're not there, head on over there, right, Quinn? They got some good stuff in that place.
They're wonderful over there. They're like the WrestleMania of pop culture.
You think so?
They're the place to be. I mean, WrestleMania is the place to be, usually.
That's true.
Generally.
Yeah. Generally.
And unless it's like, you know, WrestleMania 9 or something. But
that's a good WrestleMania. I dispute that. All right, look, we're not going to get into that today, but what I would like to tell you folks is get into our Twitter at OVP Podcast.
Yeah, you can, should get into that.
You can tweet at us. We will respond.
We like to post fun stuff over there. I like the conversation with the fans.
Sure.
And, you know, posting all the fun pictures, and maybe they post some commercials back to us.
Or, yeah, stuff we've never seen.
Yeah, stuff we'll share stuff that we have seen but mm-hmm. we never saw before, and then
right.
you can share that back at us, and it's a whole interactive kind of thing.
It is. There's
social
like
media. It's
social
really
media.
Social. You know?
We're in the social media room, actually.
Social sphere room. Yeah.
And of course, you can email us at any time at ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, we're a bunch of places. Where are we these days?
We're in everywhere, from my understanding.
Oh, yeah?
We're on iTunes.
Yes, we are, yep.
And iTunes, by the way, we need reviews.
We got to get that Colt Cabana off the charts.
We're going to catch him one day, but all you got to do really is just
go to iTunes.
Go to iTunes, either open up the app.
Yep.
Or open up the actual like application on your desktop PC, if people still use that. And you can either just give us the stars.
Right, the snowflakes.
The snowflakes. You don't even have to write a review. You can just do that.
Yeah, if you don't want to write.
Yeah. Or you can write a review.
Yeah. Right.
Because we like those, too. We like to hear what you guys got to say.
Absolutely. We'd appreciate that. And we're also on SoundCloud, of course.
SoundCloud, Google Play Music.
Yep.
Stitcher. And Blueberry.
Blueberry, yep. And Player.fm, of
player.
Course.
Player.fm, yeah.
Every, who cares?
Yeah. Gorilla.
Yeah. I was waiting for Gorilla to say that about the Blueberry, but
he's finicky. Sometimes he says it about Blueberry, sometimes it's about Player.fm. I don't think he cares about either.
No, he doesn't.
That's the thing. What's that that video site we're on?
Oh, we're on YouTube.
Yeah.
You hear of that?
It's good.
Yeah, we got all sorts of little promo videos up there.
That's right.
And fun little accompaniment.
Yeah, right. 15, 20-minute clip.
And, you know, I want to put it out there that there's going to be some Hall of Fame stuff going on.
Yes, there is. They're going to be coming out soon. And
they're going to also be on the YouTube.
Absolutely. They're going to be right on YouTube and also on our normal locations.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that.
Stay tuned.
More details to come.
Or even tune in if you wish.
Yeah, tune in, right.
Folks, we have some great topics for you. The reason I know that is because I'm doing the first one.
Oh, are you?
I am, Quinn. And this one is kind of a companion topic to some other things we've talked about before.
What things?
So it goes hand in hand with our discussion about Vince Russo from a few weeks back.
Oh, that was a good one.
It was. It goes hand in hand with from way back when in season one about our WCW 97 talk.
Okay.
And it also goes hand in hand with the Attitude Era discussion we've had.
Hmm.
This is one thing I miss, folks. The Monday Night Wars.
The Monday Night War.
Ah, that's a good one. Very good one.
What a good time to be a wrestling fan,
wasn't it? I would say it was the best time to be a wrestling fan.
In the 90s, definitely. In the last 20 years, yeah.
You know what my favorite part about the Monday Night Wars was?
Go ahead.
Was the fact that when we started watching wrestling, we started watching wrestling like right before this happened.
That's true.
And it felt like just wrestling just kept getting better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We started at the bottom.
We started at the bottom. Now, I mean, we were after the boom, which was a high point.
Oh, yeah.
We were like, you know, like how there's a mountain and then there's a valley.
We were in the valley.
Sometimes there's another mountain.
Yeah, we were in the valley.
We were in the valley in between two mountains.
Absolutely, we were. Very poetic, Quinn.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
And the Monday Night Wars was really why that other mountain happened.
Absolutely. Folks, a quick recap for you. The Monday Night Wars refers to Nitro being on TNT on Monday nights, and of course, Raw being on USA on Monday nights.
Yes.
And Raw started first, of course, Quinn, January of 93.
Right. Raw was the flagship Monday night wrestling show.
And it was very controversial and not well advised, you know, people thought, for WCW to be competing with them in 95.
No. I mean, Raw was pretty much, you know, people watched that as much as Monday Night Football, believe it or not.
Yeah, it was a big deal. I mean, especially in our sphere here, or, you know, I hate to use this term, in our universe here, but it's true. I mean, but it's true.
Yeah.
That was where you were if you wanted to watch new live wrestling.
Right. That was like the place to watch wrestling. Like, that was the prime spot.
Right.
Like, there was other shows.
Oh, yeah, sure, of course.
Like, WCW Saturday Night.
And the Weekend Cindies and all that stuff. But, man, Nitro barges in September of 95. And, of course, their debut episode, Lex Luger.
Right. In the Mall of America.
With the trains and stuff.
They had some wild stuff going on that show, if you recall. I mean, Brian Pillman faced Jushin Thunder Liger.
That's right.
What?
Yep. Ric Flair and Sting were the first main event.
Yeah.
And right off the bat, folks, Nitro pulled, and this is Eric Bischoff, obviously, and I think it was wise, pulled no punches, Quinn.
No. This show was like, it was like getting hit by a punch, really. This was a punch.
It was.
This was a big, it felt like a pay-per-view almost, the first one at least.
Yeah, it was a huge deal.
Yeah.
And Bischoff hosted it, and he made no bones about the fact that he was competing head-to-head with Raw.
He didn't.
He was gunning for Raw.
Yes. This was, we're going to be better than that.
Yeah,
you know?
He was giving away
it
their...
It was very exciting.
It was.
That's what I do remember, because Raw was like in a malaise at that point.
Oh, yeah. Good word.
Yeah.
Very good word. Yeah,
thank you.
Raw was just in the dumps at that point, and it wasn't live every week. Nitro was.
Right.
Bischoff capitalized on that and would give away the results.
Yeah.
At the start of the show.
Now, I don't think that was in the first one, was it?
Not the first one, but he did it very early on.
Very early on, yeah.
Don't bother. It's 2 or 3 weeks old. Shawn Michaels beat the big guy with a super kick he couldn't earn a green belt with in a local YMCA. Stay right here. It's live. It's where the action is.
So the wars, right?
Yeah.
And for the first bit here, up until around the NWO, it was very back and forth, if you recall, Quinn.
Yes, it was.
Trading wins.
It was kind of just, you know, you would go 1 week to the next and you didn't know who was going to win, but, you know, it was even.
It was very even.
Yeah.
June of 96 hits, and Scott Hall has already appeared, and then Kevin Nash comes on.
Right.
That's where you get to the point where Nitro wins for 80, I forget the number, I think it's 86 weeks off the top of my head. It's 80-something weeks.
I think you're right about 86 weeks.
I think it's 86 weeks.
Yeah.
So you're talking June of 96 until April of 98. We'll get to 98, obviously, shortly. That might be the best year to be a wrestling fan.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. No
lifetime.
Doubt about it. 98 was amazing.
Yeah. But 96, I mean, WCW's product, Quinn, you and I watched it when I was watching WWF in 96 after WrestleMania. I'm not the Shawn Michaels fan that you are. I predominantly watched WCW and would flip to Raw a lot of the time.
I would do the same exact thing. I had like a special chair I watched in, believe it or not. I had a beanbag chair in my bedroom.
What color was it?
It was blue.
Okay.
And I would have that back button on the remote, my finger on it at all times.
Right, yep.
But I felt, you know what made Nitro that, like, you felt like you had to be on it more?
Mm-hmm.
I think having that jump, that hour jump on Raw when they got there, that really set it, like, I just don't want to stop watching.
Good point, Quinn. Yeah, for a while there, Nitro was 8 to 10. Raw
was
9
yeah.
to 10. Raw wasn't 2 hours yet.
Raw wasn't 2 hours. Not at the beginning.
No.
And that really hurt it, if you ask me.
It did. It did. Nitro had expanded to 2 hours in May of 96.
What a good move.
Great move. And Raw tried to fight back in later 96. They actually moved to 8 p.m. to 9 for a little while.
Because I think they were right to do that because, looking back, the first hour, like I said, is what hooked you on Nitro. You didn't want to leave the show in the middle of the show.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So there was a period of time, and I would call it mainly the latter half of 96, from the NWO until the end of the year.
Now, there were some bright spots for the WWE.
That's what I was going to say. So Nitro was dominant in the ratings, but aside from the ratings, Quinn, you and I have a fondness, and we both think it's underrated. Late 96, WWF starts to get good.
It starts to get really good, and that coincides with Russo getting the book.
Exactly, and the ratings don't reflect that right away. Yeah. It takes a long time.
But, I mean, like we've talked about in the past, ad nauseum, the push of Austin, the Pillman's got a gun.
Bret Hart turning Michael's heel. Michael's kind of turning heel, but
just
also being face.
The overall product getting edgier.
The reemergence of Sid.
Right,
The Nation of Domination.
Yeah, there was just a ton of stuff.
A lot of stuff.
We could go on and on and on.
Yeah, and we have.
I wouldn't say the undercard was there yet.
No, I wouldn't either.
The main event stuff was actually good, which was actually always, I thought, was a weak point for WCW.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Quinn. WCW had a great undercard, cruiserweights, TV title, but their main event scene was Hogan lounging around.
Basically, yeah. I always thought, like I have always said, their TV title, even their U.S. title stuff wasn't bad yet.
No, it wasn't.
It was pretty decent undercard. And
solid.
You had the Four Horsemen kind of...
They were still there.
To me, they were like the stable of like their mid-card.
Sure, that's a fair point. Mongo McMichael became a big deal. You know, it was fun.
Mongo. I know.
I don't mind him.
Yeah.
I don't mind him, honestly.
Not to go on a Mongo rant, but I think he's sorely underrated, actually.
DDP also heated up around that time.
DDP was fantastic. DDP was probably the main babyface, like, guy. Like, in the mid-card.
Definitely. So, folks, as 97 rolls around, this is where it gets interesting, in my opinion. Quinn, I want to hear your take, too. I've already gone on way back about how I really don't like 97 WCW. I think some people do share that sentiment, I've come to find
97?
Out. 97? 97 WCW. I think WWF is the superior product on Monday nights that year. I really do.
Well, here's the thing. It's tough because, yes, WWF was very good in 97. I like to look at it more as that they were kind of even as far as, like, creativity is concerned in 97 and not like 97 primarily, if we're just talking about that.
Yeah, right.
I mean, just the NWO was at its peak. I don't think personally that the NWO was like too much stuff yet.
I did, but okay.
I feel like 98's when it gets more out of hand.
98's ridiculous with that stuff.
Yeah.
I just feel like the stuff that WWF was doing in 97, meaning the Hart heel turn, the Canada thing, the Hart Foundation, Steve Austin turning face, Shawn Michaels, DX, all this stuff was so fresh and so much more engaging than watching the NWO parade around at ringside again.
Okay. I get where you're coming from with that, but the NWO was very hot in 97, and I think I think when you look back at it, you just say, oh, it's a million people or whatever. At the time, there was a coolness to that these guys could gang up and kind of take control. It was unprecedented.
Okay, fair enough.
That a stable could, even the Four Horsemen at their peak, never had a grip like that WC
Fine.
On WCW like the NWO did.
Okay, fair enough.
I'll
give you that. Now, so folks, of course, as 97 rolled on, WCW is still winning the ratings war here. The reason, well, there's a couple of reasons why WWF turned it around. Aside from, in my opinion, having a very engaging product that, you know, it takes fans a while to notice that. The ratings don't always immediately reflect that. Bret Hart gets screwed.
Bret screwed Bret.
Right.
In November 97.
Yes.
If nothing else, that makes people interested in what's going on.
No, that was a big turning point.
And it also leads to the emergence of the Mr. McMahon heel character.
Yes.
With Vince not having Bret anymore, you got to get someone to fill that spot, and Austin was right there, ready to roll.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Austin was more than ready at that point. I'd like to say, just on an aside, as far as engaging was concerned, because you said the word engaging. I think we'd be remiss not to mention WCW had its engaging stuff, no matter how hokey you might think it was. I liked the party atmosphere of Nitro.
Okay, sure.
I just wanted to throw that in there.
Fair.
The Nitro party stuff, the like
Nitro
the
Girls,
spring, the Nitro Girls, the Spring Break.
Yeah, I liked all that.
Like,
sure.
I'm just saying, like, I think sometimes people, you know, it's revisionist history. It's like, you know, they had the Mr. McMahon angle and blah blah blah.
They
but
did,
like
though.
Nitro was kind of capturing the hearts of the younger people at the time. And the later 20s demographic.
Yeah,
too.
It didn't last though.
It didn't last, but I'm just saying I know it obviously doesn't compare to Bret Hart or whatever, but I'm saying
or DX
just,
in my opinion.
Just on an engagement level, I felt like WCW was right there with them in '97.
And in 97 they had the mainstream appeal. They had Dennis Rodman. They
yes.
had Carl Malone.
Yes, they did. That was a big deal. That's again the young crowd.
Yep.
No matter what you think of Dennis Rodman and all this.
I liked him actually.
Yeah,
kid.
I'm just saying as far
favorites.
As like I know we're not talking work right here because again, I know we said this also about the Attitude Era before. Who gave a shit about work rate in 97?
The WWF fan didn't. Maybe the WCW
the
fan
mainstream
did.
Wrestling
the mainstream fan didn't.
The entertainment factor was high with both promotions.
It was, and it remained that way. And this is the year I really wanted to get to before we start wrapping up here, Quinn. 98.
Yeah, 98's probably the peak for both.
WWF finally turns it around in the ratings war,
right.
But it's very close throughout the year.
Yeah.
They turn it around with the McMahon-Austin storyline in April, after
right.
WrestleMania. Michaels is gone, you got the emergence of The Rock. This is the time that I fondly remember from the Monday Night Wars, because you had to watch both.
You did. I mean, the Goldberg stuff was happening side by side
thing.
To this.
WWF heats up, right? They get McMahon, they get the Austin, right? WCW is like, Goldberg.
Yeah.
Let's get him to the
all
world title.
All you have to say is Goldberg.
Exactly.
Like, I think a lot of people, I especially think if people who are listening to this are just want to learn about wrestling, it's really hard to look at Goldberg now and understand if
yeah.
you're a new fan how freaking hot this thing was.
Oh, it's
like,
huge.
It was like your grandma knew who Goldberg was. It was my point is that anybody knew
yeah,
anybody knew who this guy was.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
It was so big, and the way it was done was so perfect.
Absolutely.
The idea of a guy coming kind of virtually out of the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
You never heard of him before.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts rocking everyone. He's destroying them.
Yep.
It was great. It was fantastic. And there was other things WCW had too, just to kind of give them a bit mm-hmm. of a defense, because I think the WWF, their WWE stuff is more known.
It is.
But I mean, Jericho.
Jericho
in
was
98,
great in 98.
I say far better than Jericho ever was, and even now, some people love what he's doing now.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm saying this was miles ahead of even that stuff.
I loved that.
It was unbelievable. The stuff with the whole listing the moves in the ring, and
mm-hmm.
then it goes to commercial break, and he's still in the ring listing
yeah,
the moves,
I
and they
love
can't
that.
Get him. You know, him getting the
Dean Malenko feud.
The whole Dean Malenko feud, and him getting the ornaments of every cruiserweight
yep.
guy. Like, he would collect things from each of the wrestlers, and he would brag about it, and his hair kept getting dumber.
Yeah, his hair got really dumb. He had Lenny Lane as, like, his clone sometimes.
Lenny Lane, yeah, Lenny Lane was his stew. Huge.
Yep.
And like, and him introducing the cruiserweights was in 98?
Yes. Slamboree,
yes.
I think. Yep.
Yes. Look that up if you've never seen it before.
And the Wolfpack, for what it's worth, was very over.
That was hot. I you're right. That was a good
Another
one to bring up because, yeah, the Wolfpack, I think, was a big deal because nobody knew what to expect, and they were excited to see what to expect from a splinter NWO group.
Yeah.
It was kind of exciting at first.
It
like,
was.
Oh, this is different.
Kevin Nash led yeah. it. You know, had
yeah.
Sting.
It was kind of the cool guys of the NWO.
I loved him as a kid.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I loved the Wolfpack. I had the red and black NWO shirt.
I might be getting this wrong. Did X-Pac leave already by the time the Wolfpack
Yeah, he
happened?
Was over in DX.
Okay, because, yeah, for some reason I thought X-Pac was part of the Wolfpack, but that's not true.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
But he was over in DX, which was a huge deal, and we've talked
right.
about this before.
But yeah, he was over there, and that's a good
yeah.
segue to DX.
And The Rock.
Yeah, and The Rock.
And
yeah.
Road Dogg.
And Road Dogg, yeah.
And all these guys.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, we don't have to rehash a lot of what we've said already about this period of time. The wars kind of, they were over by 99, even though they were both still on. WWF had kicked their asses by the time the finger poke even.
Yeah.
And following that throughout 99, it was not a competition
I'd
anymore.
I'd say what kind of stopped everything, the hotness of WCW dead in its tracks
yep.
was Goldberg losing.
Goldberg losing was the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Right. That they should have saved that for 99.
Yeah, he could have lost. And no one's saying he should have never lost.
No, but I mean, even people like who hate people who win all the time, right?
Right.
will recognize that the gimmick of Goldberg is that he wins all the time.
Yeah.
You don't just have him lose. Like,
to Kevin Nash, too.
To Kevin Nash.
I can't.
It doesn't matter.
I don't like that.
Joe, it doesn't matter who it was.
And I cheered it at the time.
Yeah,
I was
it doesn't
happy
matter
it.
Who it was. It just Fine. Matters that it wasn't. He shouldn't have lost to anyone, even if it was freaking Bret Hart or something.
You think it still had some more miles on it?
It had so many miles
yeah,
on it.
Yeah, I agree with
it,
you.
It was just right in the middle. They could have built it up to Starrcade 99.
They could have milked it.
Yeah.
They really could have milked it. They didn't, folks, and obviously the rest there is history. The thing I really liked about the Monday Night Wars is it forced both promotions to put on as exciting of a show as possible. The stuff that Vince puts on Raw now, and I'm not Mr. Crap on New Raw all the time. I mean, I get there's some good stuff in current wrestling. I get it.
That's fun. Yeah, there
but
is.
But they would not get away with a show like no. this back then.
Well, first of all, if they had 3 hours back then, which sometimes they did.
Nitro did, yeah.
Nitro did.
Nitro
but
did.
Even when Nitro had 3 hours, they couldn't afford to be just the junk
yeah.
that Raw puts on compared to that. And I'm
right.
not, again, I'm trying not to crap on Raw,
yeah.
but there's no feeling of like Raw needs to do something right,
right.
now.
There's no sense of urgency.
That's what the word I was, that was what I was looking for. The
yeah.
sense of urgency.
There's no sense of urgency on
where
Raw.
Where you feel like even when Nitro was dog shit in 3 hours.
Sure, in like 99 and stuff like that.
You could tell they still wanted there to always be movement.
Oh, yeah.
That stuff is happening. You gotta be here. You gotta be on TNT. You gotta be here right fucking
yep.
now. Like,
exactly.
Sorry, but it's true.
No, and Quinn, that's the perfect way to sum up the Monday Night Wars. You gotta be here right fucking now.
Yeah. You gotta be here to watch this shit, because it's awesome.
It was can't-miss TV for yeah. a long period of time, and I miss it because I feel like if Vince had come, and I know Vince is like, oh, everything is our competition. No, it's not.
No, it's that's not how
it's
it works.
Not. It's yeah. really not.
Yeah. It's not a direct threat.
No.
Let's put it that way.
If they want to watch Raw, they're gonna watch it.
For there to be a, like, a, simply a competitor of the same size, it's not going to happen for a while unless another billionaire comes along one day and says, I'm in the wrestling business.
And Vince will say, that's great. I'm in the entertainment business.
Yep.
Back after this.
Coming out first, he's the master of Trick Track, the master of Defunk. He is Super Callo. Look at those moves, ladies and gentlemen. He's got about a 1 in 10 chance of winning, maybe. Coming out next, this guy used to be a great bartender, but hasn't translated to his wrestling skills. He's the scourge of the illustrious Guerrero family. He is Chavo Guerrero Jr. Maybe a 2 out of 10 chance of winning. Coming out next, this is a rags to riches story. From selling chimichangas on the streets to WCW, Ciclope. Now we got Damien. He can't afford a mask. He's using paint. But sooner or later, he's going to buy a mask. I'm guaranteeing you that. The winner of the Lou Ferrigno lookalike contest. This guy's also from Mexico. El Dandy. Coming out next, he's the world welter light featherweight pesa champion. He is El Grillo. Now this guy pulled up in a nice rusted out 68 El Camino Chevy. He's the ugliest man in our sport today. He's the illustrious Quasi Juice Guerrera. He's gonna rock till he drops. Rock, never stop. Marty Jannetty, ladies and gentlemen. He is a lost and lonely soul. His name is Kidman. And Kidman, I got some calamine lotion for you after the show. This guy's the true shooter of WCW. Does he have a chance? 0 out of 10. No way. He's Evan Courageous, ladies and gents. Oh, yeah. Straight from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Oh, yeah. I want my Loverboy tit back, Lenny Lane. Of course, we got Psychosis. He's got a lot of hubcaps in his collection. This guy is Silver King. If he wins 12 more matches, he'll be upgraded to Golden King. This guy is Johnny Singer. Johnny Swinger. You ever heard of this guy? I haven't. 0 out of 10 chance of winning. No chance. Representing the Llanos 1 through 62, he is Villano 4. Ladies and gentlemen, those are your contestants in tonight's Battle Royal. I'm going to the back for a coffee because none of these guys will ever, ever beat me for my belt.
And welcome back to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, episode number 17.
Yeah.
Quinn, you're going to tell me, or you're going to ask me, I should say, what I think of something, and I'm very excited to find out what it's going to be this week.
Well, this one is a special request.
Oh, yeah?
From Jeff Walker on Twitter.
Oh, okay, cool.
What do you think of Yokozuna?
Oh, we're not going to agree on this one.
I don't think so.
I love Yokozuna.
Do you?
I do. I love Yoko. I think he's great.
Now, he is a Hall of Famer.
He is.
So I can understand your love, because apparently other people liked him enough to put him in the Hall of Fame.
Is he above the Coco line?
He is above the Coco line.
That's Coco Beware, folks. Yeah. If Coco Beware is in, we're calling it the Coco line.
Yeah, if it's like the Mendoza line of wrestling. Basically, the Coco line.
He's definitely above the Coco line. This guy was a world champion, Quinn.
Yeah, I know. He was a world champion.
What's your problem with Yoko? I love Yoko.
My problem with him is this. It's... Okay, let me go off... Let's start with the positives first.
Okay, nice.
I like that he's the dominant champion. I do like that.
Dominant heel champion.
Yeah. I like that he had a big caucus around him, like with Cornette and...
And Fuji.
Fuge the Stooge. I like that stuff. The era he's part of, not so good.
Not
but,
his fault.
You know, not his fault
not
either.
Not his fault.
And he had some memorable moments.
He
like,
did.
We'll get WrestleMania 10.
Yeah.
I'm just to name a few
we'll
before we go through the
going.
Timeline. But
yep, sure.
You know, WrestleMania 10 and Owen Hart tag team and all that.
Love that.
I think he was too short term to be considered as high. First of all, as like high ranking as he is.
Okay.
He didn't do much in that time period. I know he was the champion, but I mean, he was just booked to be the champion, and then it was like, now what do you do with him?
He just won all the time.
I have a problem with the fact that he's basically just a big fat guy.
Oh, come on!
Like, no, but I mean, like, that shouldn't be, like, the only reason he's a thing. Like, if he was 200 pounds, would he be a fucking, like, champion?
But he was portrayed as a very good wrestler for a big fat guy.
Honestly, if he wasn't 650 pounds or whatever, would he be a champion?
I don't know, probably not.
Yeah, exactly.
He'd be a head shrinker.
I mean, he is related to The Rock, so maybe he would have been a champion.
Yeah, that's true. And in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
See, anyone related to The Rock is in the Hall of Fame.
But this was before that Rock stuff.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
He actually debuted in September of 92. He was signed at the same time as the head shrinkers.
Ah, okay. Well, that makes sense.
He's a cousin of the head shrinkers.
Gotta get those Samoans in there.
That's right. Real name Rodney Anawai. He is one of the Samoans.
He was a heavy smoker, too.
He was, actually, yeah. And he drank his Diet Coke with vodka when he went out. Yeah.
I dig that.
Do you?
Well, I like Coke.
Yeah,
you're drinking
one now.
I like smoke. Like...
That's a good catchphrase for Frequent. I like Coke. I like smoke.
Yeah. So there you go.
So they bring him on board, and he's managed by Mr. Fuji, which very interesting, Quinn. Fuji very briefly managed him while still wearing his traditional, you know, tuxedo and bowler hat.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. But
very weird, right?
But then again, it is 92.
It is 92.
But that was like, what, a couple weeks or something?
Probably.
Like, yeah, that doesn't...
Shortly thereafter, he's wearing Fuji, shaves his head, and he's got the kimono. And that's
traditional kimono,
Mid-90s Fuji, basically.
Yeah,
you know?
Forever.
Yeah.
Like, no shoes on, always with sandals.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So, Yoko stampedes onto the WWF in 92. He kills Virgil at Survivor Series.
That's the most I remember him of 92, to be honest with you. It's sitting on white tights Virgil.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Speaking of white tights, Yoko has black and white tights on when he wins the 93 Royal Rumble.
Yes. And that's his big... like moment where they're like, okay, we're going with this.
Yeah, and you could see that. I mean, we talked to Scott about that. Remember, he was like, yeah, everyone knew Yoko was winning.
Which, I mean, I really don't get that at that point.
I guess the thinking was they needed a heel champion or a heel challenger for WrestleMania. So, of course, the champion was Bret Hart.
Right.
Bret Hart drags a very good for Yoko match out of him at WrestleMania 9.
It's okay.
It's really not bad.
It's not bad.
It's
You're
watchable.
Right. I mean, it has the ceremonial salt as the weapon at the end, and
then
Hogan comes out.
My least favorite ending to a WrestleMania from the 90s, and that does include Shawn Michaels beating Bret.
I know, because you don't like Shawn, but...
I do like Shawn, but I like Bret more.
You like Bret, right?
Yeah. My least favorite ending to any fucking WrestleMania in the 90s is Yokozuna beating Bret Hart, A... because that sucks, you know.
Yeah.
Then Hulk Hogan coming out and pinning Yokozuna in a non-match.
I'm just smiling over here because these are like the things with Yoko that I remember the most.
But how about this? One of my favorite moments also involves Yoko and Hogan, and that would be King of the Ring.
Yeah, with Harvey Whippleman dressed like a hobo or something, yes. Taking a picture of him.
And Yokozuna kills Hulk Hogan at King of the Ring 93, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
It really is.
No, I mean, it's a good moment. It's akin to The Undertaker defeating Hulk Hogan.
At Survivor Series 91,
it feels
like that.
It feels like that, yeah.
I would agree with you. And then we go on Yoko's, like, tour of destruction throughout the summer. We covered, you know, the body slam thing we've talked about.
On the Intrepid.
On the Intrepid. No one can body slam. Luger does it. Luger beats him by count out like an idiot.
Yeah, okay. Then, again, here's with some of this Yoko stuff I don't like.
What?
It feels like anytime somebody would beat him, like, it would, or not beat him, or, you know what I mean, like, almost beat him or something. Like, I don't know why. It just feels bumbled, like, all the time. Like, the I guess maybe just because of the two primary examples of the Hogan thing.
Right.
And the Luger thing.
What about when Undertaker could have beaten him at Royal Rumble? Yeah.
There's another Yoko strike against him. The Undertaker rises from the ashes or whatever.
You know, I'm noticing Yoko doesn't really have a very clean pay-per-view record. There's always some kind of chicanery.
No, yeah, exactly. It's another problem with him.
He beats Lex Luger by DQ at WrestleMania 10.
Right.
And then he falls off the top rope against Bret Hart, loses the world title to Bret. Big moment, right?
Big moment. I always liked when Yoko would fall on his ass because he could sell the shit out of it.
Yeah.
He was like Andre in that sense, where if Andre finally got knocked down, Andre would sell it.
Right. And then, of course, he kind of gets shunted down the card. He teams with Crush at King of the Ring. Remember that?
Yeah.
He's not even at SummerSlam.
I consider the year of 94 where he's like kind of like, you know, he's beaten.
After WrestleMania, right?
Until WrestleMania 11, he's not really a thing.
No, he loses to Undertaker, remember, in that casket match at Survivor Series?
Yeah, at that point he feels like he's Kamala or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And then he comes back as Owen Hart's mystery partner, and that was like phase two for Yoko's career.
It was
a good phase.
This is the phase I like better than phase one by a long shot, because I like him in this role as like kind of this getting revenge on Bret thing.
Yeah, and he's a heavy, no pun intended.
Yeah,
he's just the heavy.
He's a
Owen.
Goon for Owen Hart,
and he's got a beard.
Yeah, he looks badass.
He looks kind of cool. And
they should have just admitted his name was Rodney at that point.
I know. Imagine.
Yeah it would have been cool.
And Owen and Yoko kick the shit out of the Smoking Guns at WrestleMania 11. They hold the tag titles. They lose them to Shawn and Diesel.
Which, okay, they lose them to Shawn and Diesel, but is that the point when Yoko doesn't show up or something?
Owen doesn't. So Bulldog.
Oh, Owen doesn't show up, right?
Yeah. So
I always confuse that.
Basically, the rest of Yoko's career is rather unmemorable. He turns face in 96.
Yeah, and then
Fuji's got an American flag.
Fuji with the American flag, and then I remember Yoko falling off the rope and like his leg, and then they have to have a forklift to take him out of
Vader
there.
Vader breaks his leg, kayfabe.
Yeah.
They take him away on a forklift because he's fat. And then
at this point, it's getting embarrassing.
And then the free-for-all, the pre-show to SummerSlam 96, he falls off the rope and Austin pins him.
Right. But didn't a rope break or
something?
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah.
It broke. Because he was like legit like 700 pounds. And his last appearance, Quinn.
Oh my God.
Was Survivor Series.
What was his final weight? Just on a side note.
I think his Survivor Series.
What was his final
series,
listed weight?
I think his Survivor Series. No, it was like 804 or something.
No way.
It was, yeah.
Was he legit 804 at that point?
I don't know. Probably not. It's wrestling, but.
He was probably at least 750.
I think when he died, he was like in the 700s.
Oh, God.
And folks, what happened was they took him off TV after Survivor Series 96.
I think they wanted him to get healthy,
They wanted
right?
him to get healthy. And there was always this rumor, do you remember this, Quinn, that he was going to join the Hart Foundation throughout 97?
I never heard that before. That would have been cool as hell.
I know. There was this persistent rumor that Yoko was joining the Hart Foundation.
That would actually be neat.
It would have been. They just released him in 97 or 98. He was never seen again. He appeared.
Wasn't that late that they actually, he was under contract until as far as 98?
7 or 8, yeah, he was.
Really?
Yeah, and then he appeared on Heroes of Wrestling in 99, that horrible pay-per-view.
He was on that?
He was on that.
Wow.
He was fat as
fuck. I lost complete track of him after he left the WWF.
I don't blame you.
Like, I don't know of anything he was ever in.
No, it's okay. I mean, I understand that. He sadly died in 2000, heart failure, obviously, or fluid buildup in his lungs.
You know, I understand that he was unhealthy, but I kind of always figured he would eventually lose the weight, so it was kind of sad to hear that he had passed away, and really was the weight that did him in.
It certainly didn't help, that's for sure. But to go to some positive notes here, Quinn, I know there's one thing that you really like, and it involves Mr. Fuji and Gene Okerlund, and a certain Coliseum video named Smack'em Whack'em.
I would say it's my favorite Yokozuna moment. It is a segment called Cooking for the Single Man, and it involves Yokozuna. He is getting sushi or stir fry.
It's like sushi, hibachi stir fry. Yeah, hibachi, there you go.
That's what it is.
I understand he consumes 15,000. Yes, you heard me right. 15,000 calories a day.
And he's with Mean Gene and Mr. Fuji's there.
Mr. Fuji?
Mustard Fuji, as I've said before on this show.
Yeah.
Mustard Fuji's there, and they're getting the hibachi, and there's like
it's just such a funny segment.
There's a ton of little things, like they ask the guy that's serving them, Lou, how long he's been doing this. He's like, about 6 years.
How
long have you been doing this?
About 6 years.
6 years.
And then
it's
like,
so fun.
Yeah, all this other stuff, like Fuji putting Gene's hand, or Yoko's trying to put Gene's hand on the table that's
yeah,
hot.
Yeah, that's funny.
Like, it's just a silly segment, and
it's fun.
That's the fond memories of Yoko, but
yeah.
I really...
You don't like him, huh?
Not
that you dislike him, but...
It's not a dislike. It's not like I hate him. It's just like I feel like he's a bit overrated. Like, I think people have, like, rose-colored glasses about Yokozuna.
So I think from a character standpoint, it was a good idea. You know, it's interesting. He wasn't Japanese.
No, he wasn't.
Samoan.
They played it up.
Yeah.
Because Fuji...
It's Fuji.
You could get away with it. Fuji's
they got away
there.
With
yeah,
it. Yeah,
yeah. It didn't seem, even as a kid, it didn't seem so unreasonable that he was Japanese.
Right. I didn't know when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know?
What yeah.
did I know? But I like the gimmick. I like this gimmick of this big sumo wrestler, but he does moves. He had a great belly-to-belly suplex that looked awesome.
Okay, here was my main thing with him.
Yeah.
Is that, yes, you can't knock him down and blah, 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 but I just feel like, I don't know, when I watch him wrestle, I can never understand why a guy that's fast wouldn't eventually be able to, like, outrun him and get him tired or something. Like, it just makes no sense to me.
Well, that's what Brett did at WrestleMania 9. That was the whole story.
Yeah, but to me, anybody who's in shape should be able to run circles around this guy. Lex Luger. Anybody. I should be able to beat him if I just don't get near him. Like, just, like, kind of kick him and stuff and run around and make him chase me.
You heard it here first, folks. Quinn can beat Yokozuna.
I'm not, yeah, you know, I'm just saying, it just doesn't seem feasible that this guy who can barely walk.
Oh, come on.
Like, can beat anybody.
I think you're conflating, like, 96 Yoko with, like, the good 93
Yoko. Maybe
I am. He was a good worker in 93.
But he doesn't
for his
even,
size.
Yeah, he doesn't even look like he's very mobile, even at his finest hours. Like,
he had some sweet looking moves though. That belly to belly,
the leg drop
kick,
was good.
The leg drop.
It's the only leg drop that actually looks like you could die.
Yeah.
Because just so much weight coming down.
The splash in the corner.
Yeah.
The bonsai drop is a great finisher because what else do you want to see a big fat guy do to someone?
Sit on somebody's
chest. Sit on him. Right?
Well, I mean, they used to sell it like, you know, it would really knock the wind out of you. I mean, that's how it should have been sold. Like, I mean... Obviously, when you're at that point in the match, you should be losing to a big fat guy that's sitting on your chest. But, you know, as far as the beginning of the match, I could never understand why Yoko could ever win.
He was just very powerful and hard to beat. And that was the gimmick they went with.
Yeah, it was you can't knock him down, right?
You can't knock him down. It's hard to hurt him.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I like Yokozuna. I get why you don't.
Yeah.
Good enough. We agree to disagree?
Agree to disagree.
So, Jeff Walker, thank you for the request.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. We're always looking for stuff. So,
yeah, tweet at us, folks.
If anybody else wants to tweet in, or you could even email us.
Yeah, do we accept faxes?
retro, we should. We'll have to get a fax machine next to you over there in the control center
the control
of our
center
podcast.
Over here.
Yeah.
Folks, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes, please.
Yeah.
We would love that.
Hey, you could even put a request in there.
You could.
Why not, right?
Why not?
Yeah.
Let us know. Time for our next segment, Quinn.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Ah.
I've been waiting on this one.
Aha.
This is someone I really, really, really like, and I really wanted to talk about.
Okay.
It is one of my favorites, and you know this, Quinn. As soon as I say it, you're going to know this.
Okay.
One of my favorites is Gorilla Monsoon.
Ah, I love him too. I totally understand why he's one of your favorites.
I love Gorilla Monsoon.
He's fantastic.
He is one of my favorite wrestling personalities ever.
I'm Gorilla Monsoon, and I'm surprised to see you.
I think he is an era defining personality. He's
absolutely.
Just I totally just think of his voice anytime I think of anything from the '80s and early '90s.
Yep. Now, folks, quick background here. Obviously, you know, I'm talking about Gorilla Monsoon, the announcer, because I'm not up to snuff so much on the era that he wrestled in. I mean, I've seen stuff.
But
that's not what I'm talking about.
If you know, I mean, we've said on this show, we're only, you know, about 30 years old.
Yeah.
There's no way we would be able to really comment about the Yokozuna of, or not Yokozuna, Gorilla Monsoon of the 70s.
Yeah, which he might have been like the Yokozuna
Yeah, he might have been the Yokozuna of the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, Yokozuna on the brain now.
Yeah.
But Gorilla, yeah, we wouldn't really be able to be the best source of material, but
no.
We would for the Gorilla Monsoon of the commentating times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I can sum up my feelings for him like this. Anytime I hear his voice welcoming me to a wrestling show, whether it's a house show, whether it's challenge, whether it's primetime, whether it's a pay-per-view, there's instant comfort.
Yes. I would say that too. I feel at home when Gorilla's there. I feel like something's happening. I feel like I'm watching a wrestling show.
Yes.
When Gorilla's there. And I love how he always starts everything, and I think you give a tribute to it on this show. Hello, wrestling fans.
Yeah, he used to say that in the 80s. That kind of transitioned into, hello, everyone!
Hello, everyone! I'm Gorilla Monsoon along with Bobby the Brain Heenan.
And yes, you're right, Quinn. I never said that, but that is a tribute to Gorilla Monsoon.
It's a little ode to Monsoon.
He opens the show outside, couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Right.
And he closes the show with Will You Stop?
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't hit on Gorilla just yet, because Gorilla is kind of like a lot of our influences from Gorilla. And that should say volumes about Gorilla Monsoon as a personality.
Give me a break.
Give me a break.
Give me a break.
Who cares?
Who cares?
Yeah,
all these little one-liners.
Little catchphrases.
Will You Stop?
Will You Stop?
Exerbal obtubulence that I can never...
External occipital protuberance.
Thank you.
Right on the external occipital protuberance.
Yeah. That I can never pronounce, but...
The bread basket.
Right in the bread basket.
The bread basket.
Shot to the kisser.
Right to the kisser!
This is going to be a happening.
Yep.
That's going to be a happening.
That's one of my
favorite
lines.
Going to get your groceries.
Everyone's going to get their groceries, yeah. You know, Gorilla Monsoon...
Gorilla-isms, as they call them.
Gorilla-isms, that's right. Now, folks, listen... Okay, because we have a varied audience, and some of the people that listen to our podcast are big, you know, NWA, AWA fans and stuff like that. I totally understand if you don't want to categorize Gorilla Monsoon as one of the greatest wrestling announcers ever. I get that, but I'm not talking a technical point of view here. If your preference is, I'm Gordon Sully, there's a souple.
A high vertical souple.
And like all that
and
shit.
And there's nothing wrong with
that. I get it. I'm personally not a fan. Remember Gordon's Film Room, show? It's like one of the most boring things I've ever seen.
And I think it's a little out of our time to understand why people like... I can get why. I can see why. It seemed like it was more analytical approach to wrestling. But
and that's what Gordon Sully was. And I have no problem with him. I do respect him. Not my style.
No, not my style either. I always thought that Gorilla was the perfect balance of having a knowledge for what was happening in the ring, but at the same time he could switch gears just like with no reason at all and just be like just
kind of irreverent and
being
and
entertaining and like talking with his color commentary. He always made, I feel, no matter how good or bad his color commentator was, he always made him look good.
He tried, absolutely. Yeah. Even Lord Alfred, who wasn't always good. You know?
He it always seemed like it was, he wanted to be with that person. Like,
yeah.
You know, not like he wouldn't like crap on him. And even Brain, for some reason, it felt like it was, you know, he was okay with Brain being there.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost like he, even though him and Brain have a relationship that's confrontational.
On the show,
On the show, there's still like this weird, like, friendship.
Oh, it was
so
good.
And we've mentioned that before.
And with him and Jesse, it was like a mutual respect.
Mutual respect.
With him and Jesse.
And then, like you said, with Lord Alfred.
He was good
with
Lord Alfred.
We're friends.
They had fun.
Yeah, whatever.
I've seen him do shows with Gino. I've seen him do shows with Nick Bockwinkel.
I've
seen all sorts of stuff.
Just about anybody. I've even seen him do a show with Vince McMahon.
Yep, so have I. Yeah. He was, folks, he was the voice of the WWF from about 83 until 93 when they brought Jim Ross in.
Before they say that Cole was the voice of WWE, JR was the voice of WWE then, and
really
and
it was
before
Gorilla.
All that, Gorilla was the real, he's the Gordon Sully of the WWE.
That's a good point. I mean, some people might be infuriated with that because I've heard the complaints about him, you know, that he doesn't make sense half the time.
You resemble my remark.
He is just supposed to be, you know what he is?
What?
He is the wrestling announcer version of Phil Rizzuto.
What, I'm doing play-by-play? No.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
People
yeah.
hate on Phil Rizzuto, but man, is that guy entertaining to listen
yeah,
to.
Yeah, he's just lovable.
Yes.
If you watch a lot of WWE shows from the time, you get to a point when he's not there, you notice it.
Yes, exactly.
That's how you know someone's presence is strong and it's felt.
Right. Perfect example, Quinn. All these pay-per-views, the first WrestleManias, right? Gorillas at all of them, right?
Right.
SummerSlam, first one he's at, right? Survivor Series is at all of them, the first Royal Rumble. SummerSlam 89, Tony Schiavone and Jesse Ventura. And
not to say that was bad.
No, because Schiavone's good.
Yeah,
but it's weird.
You feel like something's missing.
Yeah.
And I always find that on those shows where Gorilla's still active and he's not there, I always feel like, well, the show could have been better, like automatically.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because it's just like, well, Gorilla could have been there. There's this just attachment to him.
Yes, and it's sentimental, I'm sure, but he was also just fun to listen to, in my opinion.
He was, and it's also like it's like you said, it's soothing too.
It's soothing.
Yeah. I think we should touch on Gorilla and Bobby's relationship on Primetime.
Oh, there's so much fun.
I think that's one of the best things
that
Gorilla ever
did. Yeah.
We had talked about Primetime, but the relationship between the two is fantastic.
Yep.
There's so many good moments. I mean, Primetime was, you know, what was that, on Mondays?
Mondays or Tuesdays, depending on
Mondays
the year.
Mondays or Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
It basically was a show hosted by, as we said before, Bobby and Gorilla, and they would be in a control center. I don't know call it.
Whatever you want to call it.
But it was just kind of them interacting.
Yeah, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, it was
unscripted.
Unscripted. And, you know, just you would probably throw in clips in this show.
I'm impressed. That step fixed. I'm impressed, but I'm not happy.
Why aren't you happy about
it? Why am I not happy?
Why wouldn't you be happy? Look
why
at this.
Why wouldn't I be? You see this?
You brought your laundry.
It's all I got left. I lost all my luggage. Philadelphia, Los Angeles.
Non-stop. Give me a first break. Class.
Six stops. Change planes three times. Who does your travel arrangements?
I'll have words with Miss Betty about this.
Miss Betty. Miss Betty's responsible.
You're lucky you didn't come on the hound.
I'm lucky I wasn't strapped to the wing.
So many little, like, they just had an ongoing, like, jokes with each other.
Yep.
And, like, it was Gorilla just, sometimes Bobby would get Gorilla to laugh.
Yep.
And Gorilla would get on Bobby's nerves. And
sure.
I don't know. It's just, to me, it defines Gorilla. Like,
absolutely.
Primetime.
And you know, some other things that define Gorilla, for as much flack as people want to give him as a wrestling announcer, and I get it, but you know what? I don't need every move called.
No, I don't either.
It's not radio.
I'm not blind.
Yeah. Like, I mean, honestly, we can see what's happening.
Yeah.
Right? I like the moves he does call. You know
yes,
what I mean? Side suplex, not well executed.
Yeah, I like when he's critical, too.
Yes.
Like that.
Never going to get him without hooking the leg, Jess.
That was the other thing about Gorilla, by the way. Speaking of calling the moves,
yeah,
I liked his way of calling the moves because he would be critical if somebody didn't do something correctly, like you said.
Yeah.
But he would also say we were just watching a match with, like, Brett or something,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is many Bret Hart matches when he was heel.
Yes.
Before he turned, you know, face.
Yep.
But Brett would, or Gorilla would, if he liked someone, but he was a heel, he would be critical of their moves if they were a heel, so that he kind of knew how to handle
yes,
it.
Exactly.
Like, if there was a wrestler he liked but was a heel, he knew how to handle it in a professional manner where he wasn't breaking kayfabe.
Absolutely. He was awesome at that. And you know what else he was? People associate him with good reason for WrestleMania 3 in that Hogan Andre match.
Iconic.
The irresistible force meeting the immovable object.
Right? The irresistible force meeting the immovable object.
Yeah, and him just, he really put over the fact that there was 93,000 people there. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's even, I think probably because WrestleMania always has a bazillion people there now, but
yeah.
I still feel like they just don't put enough levity on the crowd. That Gorilla did.
I guess so. I don't know. Yeah, you might be right about that.
Yeah, Gorilla was just, he would mention the fans a lot and how they're putting energy into the Hulkster.
Yep.
You know?
And before we wrap this one up, I'm trying to think of more Gorillaisms, like Pearl Harbor job.
Mm.
Pearl Harbor job!
You know, where he double-crossed him.
Yep.
You know, double noggin knocker.
Double noggin knocker, yep.
He just had a lot of these good little lines. This place has gone bananas!
He would always call the champion the greatest athlete in mm-hmm. all of sports.
Yep, and he would say things like, take a look at this guy, or he just had these little turns of phrase.
Yeah.
Like, Vince was not as good as Gorilla
no,
on commentary. That's for sure.
I would always get mad.
That was Vince.
I'm still to this day mad. I don't understand why when Gorilla is like at the best he is, right, that Gorilla should be on the A show every week. I had a problem with that.
Vince probably wanted to be the voice of the A show. You're talking about superstars, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Vince probably wanted to guide that because more people watch it. I understand that because he always did championship wrestling and stuff. That was always his show.
Yeah, I know. It's just, Gorilla's so much better.
Well, you get him and Brain on Challenge.
Right, but then it's not the B show.
It is the B show. And he also did the pay-per-views.
I mean, he got prime time every week.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was mainly
like
Gorilla. His
presence wasn't there.
He was mainly him.
He should have been their number eight, like number one.
Number eight?
Number one.
Number eight, I think, would be like Sean Mooney.
No, he should have been their number one commentator, period, not Vince.
Well, I mean, Vince didn't really do the pay-per-views, though.
True.
Gorilla and Jesse getting together was like a big deal.
Oh, it was very special.
I don't have to talk with McMahon. I'm here with you.
Like, Vince and Jesse were the team on Superstars, and Gorilla and Brain were on Challenge.
So it was a nice little mixture of the Superstars and the Challenge come together for the pay-per-view.
Yep, and that is also one of the greatest announced teams of all time.
Yeah.
Excellent. Gorilla and Jesse are awesome together.
Gorilla and Jesse are just unbelievable. Like we were saying, anybody Gorilla was with, he was perfect. He elevated any team. Johnny Polo.
Johnny Polo and Gorilla are funny because Polo's making fun of him.
Yeah, but Gorilla handles it in stride.
Yeah, and you can tell Gorilla lost his passion after Joey Morella died, after Bobby Heenan left, too.
Yeah. Once Bobby left. And
yeah, it was just sad. Yeah. But you know what I love about that? Because you can tell Vince McMahon respected him for real.
Oh, yeah.
He kept him employed.
Listen, I don't know if this is real, but is it true that, or do you know if this is true, if he had lifetime employment deal from selling his stock? Because he was an owner of the company.
He was a 1/6 owner, yeah. And
before the sale to Vince Jr.
Yeah, when Vince Sr. owned it, he had 1/6, and Vince bought him out. Vince Jr. bought him out in exchange for lifetime employment. But Vince McMahon, I think, respected him anyway.
Yeah.
He was like a mentor to people. That's the thing, folks. He was an agent backstage, too. He wasn't just an announcer.
He was also a producer.
A producer. He was an agent. He did interviews.
Yeah, I think.
He helped talent.
We'd be remiss not to mention his other contributions. Like, the Gorilla position, it's named that because Gorilla was actually, like, there after he stopped commentating.
Yes, that's right. That's the area before you walk out to the ring. Like, right backstage, Gorilla Monsoon would often be found there.
Right.
Last-minute instructions or anything like that to the wrestlers.
Exactly.
And they still call that the Gorilla position.
All in all, just, honestly, Gorilla Monsoon was, like, he was one of the cornerstones of the WWE.
Yep, of the Hulkamania era and into the new generation.
Yeah.
As president, as an announcer.
The guy was in every position. Wrestler, announcer,
you know, producer,
backstage guy.
Agent, all this stuff.
You know, anything.
He put the company over. He always sold the product, but he wasn't extremely over the top. He had his moment. Folks, I know he's not perfect, by the way, okay?
Yeah.
Like, we know this.
Right.
I know he miscalled moves. I know he said things that weren't true. I know all this. Who is perfect?
Here's the thing.
Drunken Gordon Solie?
Yeah, here's the thing with criticisms of Gorilla Monsoon.
Yeah.
The guy worked there for 50 years or so.
A long time. Over 30, yes.
Over 30
You're
years.
You're correct.
For him to not ever make a mistake, are you serious?
Like, I know, like, the Observer voted them worst wrestling announcer.
That's
like
the
6
years
in
fucking shit I've ever heard in my life. They're fucking idiots for that. Seriously, there was way worse announcers in that time than Gorilla Monsoon. That's bullshit.
Have you heard of Sean Mooney? He was an announcer during that time.
Even Lord Alford was worse.
Have you heard of him?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand that. Why would people vote that? What do you want out of him that he didn't do?
I don't get it.
Like, you want radio? Do you want to be able to turn your picture off and hear
Gorilla
every single
move? Well, Gorilla was also on WWF radio, so.
He was. I wish there was audio of that. No one's ever found audio of that.
That would be great if that was on the broadcast of WrestleMania 9.
Ten. He does 10 on radio.
With JR or something?
Well, he does SummerSlam.
What's that one with JR that they're talking about? Armed Services Radio or something?
He does SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and Royal Rumble with JR. And then it's like Chet Kopick for WrestleMania 10.
If someone could ever uncover that.
Oh, God, please. Richard Land, are you out there?
Yeah, Richard Land.
Can
somebody
you find that?
If anybody could find that footage.
Oh, man.
Like, just the raw audio.
Just the audio.
Because I would just play it. I'd turn on my network, hit mute, yep. and fucking play
sync
that.
Sync it up right
sync
over.
Sync it up and just do that.
Imagine him calling Brett versus Owen
oh, God,
from WrestleMania 10.
So good.
Oh, there he is!
yeah.
The Rocket Man!
Yeah, exactly.
Quinn and I have been known amongst the people that know us to, out of nowhere, launch into these high-pitched version of Gorilla Monsoon impressions.
Yep, and it always starts with, oh, there it is!
Oh, there it is! Because yeah. for whatever reason, he had a higher voice at WrestleMania 6.
Oh, there it is!
Okay, this is how I look at his voice.
Okay.
Just on an aside.
Yeah, let's end it on a goofy note.
Okay.
You know?
Gorilla would always do this thing where he would start like a sentence or something with like...
High up.
Yeah, he'd be like, oh, there it is!
Just...
Oh, the leg drop. yeah. Like, you know, like he
That's
would,
right.
Yeah, he would just like... He would always do that, so it was just a little gorillaism that we've always picked up on,
yeah.
and it always makes me laugh.
Yes.
And whenever I think of him, whenever I think of him getting excited about something, I always think of that high pitch to
yeah.
the low, to the low
yeah.
every time.
Oh, there he is!
Yeah.
Jess.
Yeah.
and then, look, Jesse.
Yeah.
You know, Barbarian doesn't like flair. Stuff like that. Like
yeah.
That,
or
that
or
low
like
voice.
The sorry. We're going in on a tangent, but I have to bring up one other gorilla thing.
What is it?
You remember at WrestleMania 4 when they like get bored in the middle and then like Demolition's come in the ring and he's like, I don't think those outfits are legal, Jess. Like, like in the low, like
yeah,
he doesn't want like anyone to know about it. Like,
I don't think those outfits are legal, Jess. What are you talking about, Monsoon? They've been wrestling with him
yeah.
for months.
Not sure those outfits are legal either, Jess.
Oh, they've been wrestling with them for months, Gorilla.
Yeah,
come on.
I didn't say they haven't been wrestling with them. I just said I don't believe they're legal.
And yeah. Oh, God. We're really straying
Go
off
ahead.
Here. But one other. I'm going to say one other, and then something else is going to come
it's
up.
It's fine.
Remember at WrestleMania 6 when Gorilla goes, spend a lot of money.
Spend a lot of money.
Yeah, he just says it twice for no reason whatsoever.
Spend a lot of money. Spent a lot of money.
And also, when Jesse mentions Axl Rose, and he's like, I'm not familiar with Axl Rose from Guns N' Roses.
Oh, that Axl.
Yeah. yeah.
Robert Goulet reminded me a little of Axl Rose.
Axl Rose?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with Axl Rose, yeah.
From Guns N' Roses.
Oh, Guns N' Roses. Okay, that Axl.
Yeah, just Gorilla was just an awesome announcer.
He was so much fun.
You had to, like we said, you had to really watch a lot of it. And with the network, you can now.
Yep.
And you can, after doing that, I would say you would really understand why people love him so much.
He made every event feel like it was going to be a happening.
Yeah.
And he made every event feel like history was made.
Yes.
And you know what? That's a good legacy for Gorilla Monsoon. We love you, Gorilla. History was made.
We love you.
Back after this.
One of the greatest men I've ever known, Robert James Morella, passed away at age 62. He was celebrated and beloved worldwide as legendary superstar Gorilla Monsoon. To his friends, he was known simply as Gino. Gino had a gorilla-sized passion for life, this business, and more importantly, the people in it. Behind the scenes, he was a cornerstone in the World Wrestling Federation. Our thoughts and prayers go out to his wife, Maureen, and his entire family. With great sadness and heavy hearts, we say goodbye to Gino, a very special man who lived a very special life.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, episode number 17. Quinn, it's unfortunately time for our last segment.
Yes, it is.
We're reviewing something.
I'm having fun here.
I am having fun here, too. This has been good. Little tribute to the big guy,
yeah,
Gino Monsoon.
Gino Monsoon himself.
Did it? By the way, just a quick side note. I think this is true for both of us.
Yes.
When Jesse used to call him Gino Monsoon and you first started watching, did you think he was talking about Gene Okerlund?
Okay. WrestleMania 1,
yeah.
Like when I first saw it, was the most confusing fucking shit ever.
Okay.
Because, yes, he keeps calling him Gino Monsoon, and isn't Mean Gene there
yes.
with them at some point?
I didn't understand it either.
I was so confused. I thought he was talking to only Mean Gene for like the whole show.
Yeah.
Like,
by the way, folks, we didn't mention this. Gino was like Gorilla Monsoon's backstage nickname.
Yes.
That's what everyone called him.
But oddly, he's calling this in a professional fucking show.
It was bizarre. Someone must have told them to stop, because you really don't hear it much after like the 80s.
Yeah. And speaking of a professional fucking show, we got a review.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. What's on the docket, folks? It's All American Wrestling. That's WWF, All American Wrestling, July 6th, 1986. Quinn, you were a wee 2 months old around this point.
Yeah, I watched this. I remember all of it. I saw it live.
Now, this show, folks, All American, was WWF's first cable show, actually, Quinn.
Wow, cable, what's that?
It was on the USA Network, back when it was really shitty.
Oh, yeah, the early cable is fun. Oh, that's a fun time, right?
USA was dump
in
the 80s and 90s.
It was no MTV, that's for sure.
You know Quinn's cousin is actually Martha Quinn?
This is true.
The original MTV VJ.
I've never met her, but if you're listening, Martha, hello.
That's Quinn's, what, second cousin or something
second
like that?
Second cousin, my dad's cousin.
I'm really not making that up. That's really
that's
true.
That's very real.
Yeah, Martha Quinn.
I'm related to all this pop culture in some weird...
This Full House star herself, Martha Quinn.
Yeah, in some weird way.
Folks, All American Wrestling was WWF's first cable show. They actually got the time slot in 1983. I believe they bought it from Southwest Wrestling.
That's weird. What time was this on?
Unless it changed later, I think it was Sundays around noon, but I don't know. I don't remember when the 80s version
was
on.
It's not a bad time slot.
No, not a bad time.
I mean, well... kind of is, but
it started off by having different promotions, believe it or not, featured on it. Yeah, in 83 84, but then it became exclusively WWF. Like Vince would show other promotions because he was part of the NWA still, remember?
Really?
In 83 he was still part of the NWA.
Oh, I did not know that. I would like to find some of those episodes.
I think the first one's on Richard Land, by the way. Is this where we got this from?
I don't know. Was it?
I think it was. Richard Land gave us full permission to shout out his YouTube channel.
Okay, yeah.
So we are doing it.
Okay, it's finally, we're taking the veil off.
Yes, he told us to do it on the Twitter. He reached out to us. He found our podcast, and we're very thankful for that and surprised.
Richard, really helped us out here. Yeah, you're awesome.
So folks, if you want tons of old wrestling stuff, go to YouTube, type in Richard Land, L-A-N-D.
Yeah.
That's this channel where we pull some of this,
not all of it, yeah.
He is awesome. This guy uploads stuff almost, I feel like, on a daily basis.
Every couple hours at this point.
And it's stuff you absolutely will not find on the network.
Yeah, and you need to watch some of it because it's good stuff.
It's so good. It's the cable shows, it's prime times, it's Cindy's, it's house shows.
It's all a random grab bag, really.
It's awesome. So we grabbed All American from July 6th, 86. This was not an A show. It was not a B show. Maybe a C or D show.
Was it that low?
Huh? It was not A or B, that's for sure.
That's true.
We get a cheesy patriotic intro.
I thought this looked like it dated the show.
The intro sucked.
Like it looked like ass. it made it look like it was from the 70s when it's from the 80s and not the early 80s.
It's mid-80s here.
We're in the boom period right now.
Yeah, post-WrestleMania 2.
It looks like dog shit.
Hogan with the shitty belt there's a clip of, right?
Yeah, that fucking belt.
The one that he won from
the one we talked about, the green one.
Yeah, it sucks.
Fuck that.
So the first thing, this was very confusing. It almost feels like as soon as the intro ends, we immediately are joined in progress with Bret Hart versus C.V. Afi from the Boston Garden.
Yeah.
But it's for 8 seconds, and then we go to Mean Gene from the control center, the sports control center.
Yes. Yes.
And who's in the background, Quinn? Kevin Dunn,
Kevin Dunn and Kerwin White.
Yeah,
right?
They're in the background.
Yeah, that was really fucking weird, right?
They never turn around.
Yeah, they never, ever, it almost looks like Dunn's, trying not to. Did
probably
you notice that?
Want his teeth to be seen.
Yeah, that shit.
Kevin Dunn is still employed, folks. He is still their director, and he still sucks.
Yep.
And he's responsible for the shaky cam that we get now.
Oh, the one, the zoom-in thing, too?
Yeah, all that stuff.
Fuck him. I can't stand that guy.
Gene had a huge bow tie
for his standards. He also says...
he had a fifth on the fourth.
Yeah, he had a fifth. He's very jokey in this episode.
He says, Meshuggah.
Yeah.
He makes no sense.
No, but actually, it's not that bad, but it's... It's actually awesome.
I had a fifth on the fourth. How about you guys?
What, Gene?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's funny.
Yeah, he is funny.
You could tell that this seems to be a theme for the things we watch.
Yeah.
We seem to watch these shows where no one cares.
Right.
And you can tell Gene does not care.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, not to say that the matches are great or anything.
Oh, no.
But fucking Gene in the control center with Kevin and Kerwin over there.
Yeah, he's hysterical.
Yeah, they're a pile of laughs.
Speaking of a pile of something, he throws to our first match, which is Cousin Luke versus John. Not Johnny. He's introduced as John K-9.
Well, okay, you shouldn't
first
even say
all,
not the Johnny. Because this isn't Cousin Luke. The guy, the Hall of Famer Cousin Luke.
Yeah, not Cousin Luke of, you know, Cousin Butch, Cousin Luke.
Yeah, not that fucking shit. No, it's Cousin Luke.
The hillbilly.
These freaking hillbillies. What the fuck with these guys? This guy looks like a piece of dog shit. He's got overalls on, but like the long kind, and they're like all wet.
Bell-bottomy.
He's wearing like Converse shoes instead of like wrestling boots.
Quinn, you noted this is actually the first time you saw Cousin Luke. Right.
I would always hear that my Cousin Luke. I'd be like, okay, I guess that's just some stupid thing.
It's Hillbilly Jim's cousin.
Yeah. I'd always hear Hillbilly Jim talk about it, but I never saw the damn guy. This is the first time I ever saw him wrestle, and boy, did he not impress.
He's still better, though, Quinn. You have to admit this. He's still better than Uncle Elmer.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
Uncle Elmer's really bad.
He is better than Uncle Elmer. I think you could actually repackage this guy, to be honest with you, and he probably would seem a little better than he did.
Package him up and send him away somewhere.
Yeah.
The ref has a fro. Who is this ref, by the way?
That was bizarre. I've never seen Fro Ref ever, but from now on, I will call him Fro Ref. Like,
now, thank the Lord, and speaking of Gorilla, he is on commentary with Bobby.
Yes!
In 86.
I did not see this coming.
No, because Brain didn't do too much commentary until he stopped managing.
Brain and Gorilla, by this date, 7-whatever, was Brain and Gorilla doing Primetime?
Yeah.
Okay, so there was some history.
Yeah, now, Quinn, you noted this. The ring is weird because the bottom turnbuckle is yellow.
Yeah, only in this match, in this weird fucking match, there's another thing with this, the bell.
It's like a bellhop at a hotel,
yeah,
right?
it's like a ding-ding, like you would come here, bellhop.
Service.
Yeah,
young man!
That was the bell.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very strange.
The hell is this, by the way?
Everything just seems unofficial. It doesn't even seem like it's in Allentown.
I don't think it is. I don't know where it is.
Yeah, because later I think it's in Allentown because I see those doors.
Yeah, later on we go to Allentown.
Yeah.
With Billy Joel.
Yeah. What the hell is this? Like, really? What the fuck is this?
I don't know. And then Quinn says to me, why is he, Cousin Luke, sweating from his ass? He looks like he's about to paint something.
He does, right?
Yes.
Did you not think that his attire was highly inappropriate for this
like
fucking
shit,
like wrestling match?
Yes.
With K-9 Dog here or whatever his name is?
I actually remember the name Johnny K-9. I don't know.
From what?
From jobbing.
I mean, he sounds like he should be on like a show. Like, with, what's that K-9 show?
Rin Tin Tin, K-9
Belushi?
Cop?
What? No, Belushi.
Belushi?
What? Yeah, the other
Turner
Belushi.
Turner and Hooch?
Turner and Hooch.
Belushi? Yeah. Jim Belushi, the shitty
Jim
one?
Jim Belushi, wasn't he in a movie K-9?
He sucks. And yes, you're right, he was. But Jim Belushi sucks.
Yeah. I said this, man, Cousin Luke looks like dog shit.
He does, he looks horrible.
Speaking of K-9.
Yeah. Now, Gorilla and Bobby are already a good commentary team in 86.
No, yeah, they should have just always been doing that.
I know, it's amazing, right?
It's amazing they didn't make it a mainstay commentary team earlier than they did.
Yeah, because what they're doing, folks, is they're, and this is why Gorilla is not the worst wrestling announcer, is because they're making a match between Cousin Luke and Johnny K-9 entertaining.
I don't know how they did it. I mean, it wasn't the greatest match, but I could tolerate it because of the commentary. And I had said here, what is Johnny K-9 involved with the Moondogs with that name?
Yeah.
Like, I literally, like, I never, I, this is just a jobber to me. You said you'd saw him before.
I have.
To me, it was just any old jobber. But I thought, like, maybe he was involved with the Moondogs because of the K-9 thing. I was, like, serious. I wasn't even, like, trying to be funny.
I know you were.
Yeah.
Now, I was saying, I honestly hope that Johnny K-9 wins.
Yeah, I mean, me too. Who doesn't? Who the hell is this ref?
I don't know. I,
like, seriously.
Well,
like,
I've
what the
never
fuck?
Seen him. He looks like Screech and Nick Patrick.
I said here, is Johnny K-9 from England? His haircut looks English.
I don't know what you mean by that.
I don't know either. Maybe I was just thinking of that UK wrestling WWE thing, and
yeah,
he had like a short. He had like short hair, so
or Dynamite Kid hair.
He did have Dynamite Kid hair, so maybe that's what was going on. I don't know. You know how my brain is. I just say shit sometimes.
Regardless, this match is a crap fest. And Quinn, you noted that it's the worst big boot splash combo like ever seen. Okay. That ends the match.
The Irish whips him, right?
Luke
and
does, yeah.
Fucking fat ass cousin Luke can't get his damn leg up high enough, so he big boots him in like the upper chest, almost
in the boob.
Gut.
In the boob,
yeah,
almost.
In the boob. And then he falls down, canine, and then he just jumps on him with no.
It's the worst.
No
splash
fanfare.
Ever. Yeah.
No noise or anything. Just kind of jumps on him. 1, 2, 3. You know.
Yeah, and that's
cousin
it.
Luke, not the Hall of Famer. Over
cousin Luke wins, and that prompts Bobby Heenan to say, don't any of these hicks have yeah, last names?
That was good. Brain is awesome.
Brain's awesome. And Quinn, you said even the ring that Luke wrestles in sucks.
Yep. As we noted, it doesn't even have a bottom turnbuckle.
We cut to Gene back at the control room with a dictionary and his word of the day here. Word of the day, by the
yeah,
way.
What?
Well, I would imagine keep people posted on the Funkin' Wagnall. Gentlemen, I've got a word for especially the two of you.
What is this show? This is Sesame Street? This is Pee-wee's Playhouse? Word of the day? Ah!
The word of the day is barkeeper.
Ah!
One who owns or manages a bar. Thank you, Gene.
I didn't know that. Never heard of it.
Update.
Thanks, Gene.
Update with WWF Magazine.
This set is so shitty. Like, what happened here? Because usually the set for this is not this crappy. Like, you know what made it the worst? It had the usual WWF, like all the, like, you know, like
the layers of, like,
layer.
The logo.
What
yeah.
was that place?
It was like C-Town.
That's
town,
it. Yeah,
town,
it was like C-Town.
WWFF, WWF.
Right. But the problem is in big red fucking letters over the like recessed logo is like update, two updates, two. Why?
And you also said there were crappy LJN figures sitting
yeah,
on the
desk.
Yeah,
of Sheik and Volkov.
Right, because they're relevant here.
Now, the LJN figures, by the way, are the
shit. They suck.
Like, they're the worst.
They're just rubber.
They're rubber
you
and
can't
they're way
do
too
anything.
Big.
They're way too big. You can't do moves.
Yeah, so fuck that.
So we get a quick clip of Sheik and Volkov versus
ha-ha,
the Bulldogs.
See, that's why they have the figures.
Sheik and Volkov versus the Bulldogs from MSG. A lot of dogs on this show.
Yeah, and there's tons of garbage in this ring, too.
Yes, and then Gene has a cardboard cutout, speaking of Sesame Street, cardboard cutout of a fire hydrant. He's like, this is a fire hydrant.
Yeah, what was this analogy? He's like, this is going to be outside of a lot of arenas. I guess he's talking about how dogs pee on a fire hydrant. And then fucking water sprays from offset into Gene's face.
Yes.
It's like, enough of that. Like, as they like,
he does.
As they like phase out or whatever.
And he also says the British Bulldogs are very fond of fire hydrants. They're not dogs, Gene. They're people.
So is he saying that the British Bulldogs pee on fire hydrants like Matilda does?
Would it surprise you?
No.
So we cut to our next match. Jake the Snake Roberts
versus Super Mario Mancini.
That's right. Now, Mancini Quinn, they noted this from Hoboken, New Jersey.
It's right around the corner.
As Gorilla would say, right down the road there.
Yeah. Right down the street.
About 40 minutes away. Great, yeah. Great Cuban place in Hoboken.
You giving them a plug right here?
Called The Cuban. I don't know if they're still open, but they're the ones, Quinn, that owned our 7-Eleven over here.
Are they?
Yes.
Oh, it's the same place.
The 7-Eleven that got bought out by corporate and they ruined our 7-Eleven.
That place is dog shit now.
And any of our friends that know us that are listening right now, they know exactly what we're talking about. 7-Eleven Jimmy was the best guy.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Come back,
amazing.
Jimmy.
Yeah, Jimmy, if you're listening.
Now we got to drive 15 minutes to see Jimmy.
Yeah, it's upsetting.
It's a bunch of shit.
But, anyway,
we're at the same arena, the same Afro ref.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. The same Afro ref.
Now, Quinn, did you notice this? Jake is clearly getting cheered. He's definitely
okay,
a heel.
Okay, this isn't the first time this is going to happen in this review, by the way. But
the heel's getting cheered, right.
Yeah,
right.
This is weird. Like, and we're only a couple months away from Jake turning face, so it's pretty obvious here. Like,
we're getting there.
Yeah, I said Jake the Snake, more like Jake the Face. You know?
And then Gorilla throws to a brief insert interview with Ricky the Drag Steamboat.
Yeah, first, why is his hair all dump in this?
He looks like Shemp.
Yeah, he does look like Shemp. He's got the worst haircut ever. I don't recall Steamboat having his hair that short.
It was really bad.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed this, Quinn. Jake has his Hasbro wrestling figure tights.
Yeah, the green with the snake on
with
him.
With the purple
yeah.
snake.
Yep.
So the crowd's chanting for the DDT.
It's so over.
Yeah.
And guess what? DDT, 1, 2, 3, it's over.
1, 2, 3, over.
Very quick.
Damian crawls around Mancini, of course, and the brain says, I wonder if Damian likes Italian food. Get it?
Yeah, Gorilla hates it.
Gorilla's all upset, remember?
Now, I noted here, like, it's no, like, it's no coincidence to me that Jake the Snake's over. If you're a 12-year-old kid in that fucking crowd,
yes,
right? Jake is a dude that drops people on their head, knocks them the fuck out, and then chokes them out with a snake. If you're like 10 or 12, that's the coolest shit ever.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know how they kept him heel this long, even.
That's a very
honestly.
Good point, Quinn.
He's awesome.
Very, very good point. We throw to an interview with Ken Resnick. If you don't remember who he is, that's okay.
Yeah, fuck him.
He was there in 86, basically.
He's not very good.
And he interviews Haku, but at this time he's known as King Tonga still.
Yeah, I note here, they should have never had him talk.
Haku,
I was thrown off by the segment. It offended me that King Tonga was talking.
First of all, Haku doesn't have a beard.
No.
He's still a face.
Yeah.
And he sucks at talking. And yep. I love the guy. I like him a lot.
All three of those things are true.
And I like him a real lot.
Yep.
But he sucks at talking.
He does.
So apparently this interview is because he had body slammed John Studd, which
who
is
cares?
Weird. Yeah, I know. Like, who cares? Then we just cut to Bret Hart. Yes.
Yes.
Versus Afi. Who's CV Afi, Quinn? You can sum this up.
CV Afi is basically the replacement
yep.
to Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
Yep.
And he sucks balls. He is fucking horrible. He's got like the shitty no beard. His hair is like in a jerry curl. He's got shitty like knee pads on. I don't remember. Well, Snuka had knee pads later, but I don't think he did before. He just looks like crap. He looks so, I think he's got like, you know how Superfly had the shorts that were the,
leopard print?
Leopard print. His are like pink leopard print. Like, what is he, a lady Snuka? Like, he fucking, I can't even, there's nothing else I could say. He's just like the worst thing ever. And these fans know it too.
Yeah, they're booing him.
Yeah, they're booing fucking CV Afi, who's big face here, against Bret the Hitman Hart, who's heel in black.
Yes,
Hitman
all black
looks sides. Like a badass.
It's awesome because it's Boston, and Boston is a good crowd.
Yeah, and I don't blame the crowd. Like I said, I had said at the time, well, no wonder they're booing Afi. He's poop.
He is.
He's just
poop.
A replacement for Snuka.
Now, you know what's funny here is we have his Lord Shit.
Yeah, his Lord Shit on commentary.
That's an affectionate nickname for our good friend Lord Alfred.
Lord Alfred, don't take offense.
Yeah, please don't.
Yeah.
His lordship.
That's
a
shit.
Quinn and I say that when we're doing a Sean Mooney impression.
Yeah.
Like, well, your lordship.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where that comes from.
So yeah, like you said, Quinn, black tights for Bret. It's before the days of the pink.
Yeah.
They weren't doing pink yet. Gorilla says the name of our show.
Yeah, he says our vantage point.
That's right.
I guess
does.
He knew we were watching. He knew baby Quinn was watching.
Quinn, I have a great line from you here I want to read. CV Afi's a fucking jobber. He's really shitty, and I hate his knee pads.
I went on a rant earlier, but
yes.
I mean, I was ranting during this match.
Yes, you were.
I just can't stand the guy. I don't really know why he was ever there, and it didn't work. I mean,
no.
He was gone after like
87. He was gone.
Did he even last like a year?
Yeah, he did. He was there until 87, but still, I mean, he sucked. This match is so great that the announcers veer into a discussion about Ed Strangler Lewis,
saying how he took people out with a headlock,
side
or
headlock,
chin lock
yep.
or something.
Yep. So. Afi almost wins, and Quinn and I both freak out.
I couldn't believe. Even Bret in this state where he's just a singles, but like not even anything.
Yeah.
Even that should not lose to CV Afi.
And that's the thing, is like, we don't know who would win this, because really it could have gone either way.
It did. It could have gone. And Lord Alfred doesn't care either way, because he's talking about canoeing.
Yeah, he just goes in this like tirade about canoeing. Bret with a nice kick to the balls.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Big Bret chant
yeah,
from
now
Boston.
He's getting chanted. He's a heel. This
yes.
is very odd for 86 WWE. This is when the faces and the heels got
yeah.
the proper
yeah,
reaction.
Yeah, I know. This
so.
Is very strange. Gorilla, you notice this, Quinn? He has a big problem with Bret's hair the whole
I'm
match.
I'm telling you, like we were talking about Gorilla before.
Yeah.
This is his shit where he's
yeah.
trying to act like he's disappointed, but he, you know, he likes him.
Yeah.
Because he's always calling the excellence of execution and all this shit.
He did say
yeah.
that in this matchup. Yeah. So Afi fucks up selling Bret's clothesline.
What was that?
It was horrible.
Yeah, he didn't take it right. It's a fucking clothesline. How? There's some moves that I just don't understand how you could, like, screw up, and, like, one of them is a clothesline.
So as Afi's making his comeback, Quinn just says, look at this bullshit.
Yep. That's what I thought of everything. Yeah. It was all bullshit.
So Offie goes for his, like, I guess, like, super Offie splash off the top rope.
Super Offie splash.
Get it?
Yeah.
Super fly splash.
Yeah, exactly.
Brett catches him, reverses the momentum, gets the pin. Everyone's all happy.
Even the announcers are happy.
Gorilla makes sure. Did you notice that, Quinn, to point out that Brett didn't grab the tights?
I like that. Again, this is, you know, Gorilla likes him.
He was proud of Brett,
yeah,
remember?
He can't root for him because he's heel right now.
He's like, perfectly done, or whatever he says.
This is the next thing here is my favorite part of this. The moment with Gene Okerlund.
Yeah, he's on the phone with Luciano Pavarotti,
yes,
the opera singer.
He's on the phone with Pavarotti, and Gene says, "What do you think of this, pal? What do you think this is, pal? PBS?"
Yeah, and then he's like, "Your hometown? Oh, parts unknown."
Yeah.
It's like, what is going on? What is this show?
Yeah, it's so weird. And then Gene starts talking about how at 4th of July he BBQ'd gefilte fish. What is this, Rush Hour now?
So Gene throws to the Body Shop. Now, folks, real quick, the Body Shop was Jesse Ventura's version of Piper's Pit.
Yes.
Except Jesse Ventura's off filming, what, Predator or whatever the hell came out,
yeah,
after this?
Yeah, whatever came out in 87, I think.
Probably
it is Predator.
Demolition Man, or
this,
Running Man.
This brings us my favorite line, a line where we had to pause this show because I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah, Gene throws... You can say the line.
Okay.
Gene throws to the Body Shop, guest hosted by Don Morocco and Mr. Fuji. And what does Gene say about Fuji?
The guy's got a dipstick factory in Japan.
He's got a dipstick factory in Japan.
All serious.
All deadpan.
Non sequitur.
I lost my fucking shit. That was so random. He just continues on his sentence, like, after he says that, too.
The guy's got a dipstick factory in Japan. His guest, first of all, Fuji's not even there.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It was so weird. He's like, Mr. Fuji's with him, not there at all.
Not there at all.
What, did he just not look at it?
Yeah, probably. So Don Morocco hosts the Body Shop. His guests are Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy with Bobby Heenan. Why is Don Morocco hosting this?
I don't know why Don Morocco's, but I could tell you, I got a question for you.
Yes.
Do you know what Big John Studd's initials are?
BJS.
Or BJ's.
The bulk department store,
yeah,
of course.
Of course.
We're a very highbrow show, folks.
Yeah.
And we would never, ever sink to any kind of blue humor or anything like that. This is a family-friendly fucking show.
The family-friendly edition.
Stud looks like he woke up 5 minutes ago, as usual.
He got his bathrobe on. Looks like he walked out of the shower.
Always. Stud somehow calls Bundy the new champion, and then he says, like, he's the people's world champion.
How does it feel to be the new people's world champion? Was he The Rock?
Bundamania running wild, Bundy says.
It's Bundamania time. He was talking about Bundamania back at WrestleMania 2.
He loves his Bundamania.
So some good continuity there.
Yeah. Why wouldn't it just be Bundy Mania? Why is it Bunda?
I don't even remember this line, but why does Bundy say Don Johnson doesn't have a thing on you?
To Morocco?
Yeah.
Oh, because of Fuji Vice.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which we'll get into another time.
Yeah.
Bobby makes fun of Lou Albano to end the segment. Nothing at all notable happened in this.
He just called, like, Lou Albano fat or something.
Basically.
Like, what is it? Why does everyone hate Lou Albano so much? Single-handedly.
I don't know. Yeah. I know. Rock and wrestling.
Yeah.
Gene then, we go back to Gene in the control studio, and he's showing us pictures from his trip to
Japan. This is good. He shows pictures. He shows pictures of clouds, and he calls it Cloud 9, and then he says, well, you could throw that out. And then he shows pictures of a Japanese subway.
The outside and the... I'm not even near my mic. The outside and the inside?
Yeah. The outside and the inside, and I don't know why. It's so weird. And then we cut to our next match. Max Blue with a red coat on versus Paul Mr. Wonderful Orndorff back in Allentown.
Max Blue. This is from Allentown. Yeah, McMahon and good condition, Vince.
It's a vulgar cutter.
Every opportunity we make, I feel like we make fun of Bruno.
He's got too many crackers in his mouth.
Love him right now. Anyway, so.
Now which one's the arm, when the arm gets small, which arm is that?
I think
if you know Mr. Wonderful's history, I know it's not funny, but basically in the early 90s, Mr. Wonderful had some condition with his his arm where it became like a little baby arm. And anytime I saw this, I saw it at a young age, and it always stuck with me. So anytime I see Mr. Wonderful, no matter when it is, I'm always like looking for the arm that turned into the baby arm. Or if it's the baby arm like there, I'm like, which one is it again? Like, I can't tell. It's like Texas Tornado, except with arms.
Orndorff is still a face, so he's like Brutus Beefcake.
Yeah, he is very beefcakey.
Now, Max Blue, Quinn,
I just said this is one of the worst names I've heard yet.
Max Blue, B-L-U-E.
Yes. He did have baby blue, like, underpants tights.
He did have the underpants
but
tights.
But he still had red knee pads. What's with the red with this
he
guy?
He doesn't get it.
He should have been Max Red.
Yeah.
He liked red better.
Vince sounds, which is rare because he usually didn't in the 80s. Yeah. Vince sounds like that 90s shilly
very,
Vince.
Yeah, he's very shilly and 90s-y, which is very strange. And just pile driver and dead match dead. Is like literally three
yeah.
seconds long.
This match blew.
Yeah, it was terrible. Okay,
it?
Yeah, I got it.
Thank you. Paul Orndorff then, Howard Finkel announces him as the winner. And then Orndorff's like, the old Mr. Wonderful, because this is right before Orndorff's turn, Quinn.
Right.
So he's, like, foreshadowing that he doesn't like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
By the way, folks.
Which led to a good match, by the way.
It's a very, at the big event?
Yeah. No,
and, well, that's
a cage match at Saturday Night's
and
main
the
event.
Cage match.
Yeah,
but
I like
the big
that.
Event, is that has a good match, yeah. too.
That's the best thing Mr. Wonderful was ever in, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Other than, wonderful, you know it's Mr. Wonderful.
But he had baby
the
arm
WCW,
during that.
But baby arm, yeah.
Now, folks, you might have noticed, sometimes we say Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Can you explain what that is, Quinn?
Well, there's a pronunciation, like, elsewhere.
In the Midwest, usually.
Yeah, in the Midwest, they call him Hulk Hogan instead of Hulk.
It's just how they say Hulk.
It's just how they say it, so.
So in case you're wondering why sometimes we say that, we know it's Hulk Hogan.
Right. We didn't grow up with Hulk Hogan. It's just a funny thing that we discovered other
yes.
people saying it that way, and we thought it was funny.
And sometimes you might notice us say Hagen. That's just
That's
because we say
stupid,
that.
Stupid, yeah.
Yeah, Hagen.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ken Resnick now with Quinn's favorite.
Yeah, you know how I always ask, when's the Macho Man going to be on this show? Well, here he is, the yeah. Macho Man Randy Savage himself,
no,
minus Miss Elizabeth.
Yeah, no Elizabeth.
No Elizabeth. And Resnick stirs some shit up about that.
And Savage says, you're an overconfident TV announcer.
Yeah, that's his big response.
You know, you're an overconfident type TV announcer.
Savage only defends the title once every 30 days, and Resnick has a big fucking issue
yeah,
with this.
But Savage is okay with it.
First of all, I like that Savage corrects him and says, I wrestle every night. What are you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, because Resnick's like, you only wrestle once every 30 days, and he's like, you mean to defend the title.
Yeah, he has to correct him.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's how good Macho Man is.
So Resnick runs through a bunch of contenders, one of which is Pedro Morales.
What the fuck? Pedro Morales is horrible at this point. He shouldn't even be in the company at this point. His tights go up to his boobs. He is not even close to the Macho Man's level. He's not even close to some of the people that get listed here.
I know.
Like
Rick Steamboat
Rick
and a bunch
Steamboat,
of other
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
Right. Now, Savage here, he's already been in the company for like a year. He's still going on
yep.
about how Hogan sucks.
Right, and that, you know, he's coming for you, Hulk Hogan.
In fact, a direct quote he says is, I'm more important
yep.
than Hulk Hogan.
He says Hulk Hogan can't tie his shoes either.
So then we cut away to the address for the All-American
what?
P.O. Box.
Okay, why is this always a thing on these shows back then? Like, what are you gonna write to them? Like, this show was good? Like, what? They don't give a shit. Like, what? They're not gonna read it. Is this so, like, if something, like, offensive happens, you can tell them about it and they can fix it? It's in the can, like, months before. There's nothing. There's nothing that writing into this show will do.
No, there's not.
Yeah.
So then we come back to Gene, and of course it's more Japan picks. Some guy, like, he's like showing him where the restroom is, and it turns
yeah.
out it's a shack.
Yeah, yeah. And Gene, he also notes that the guy in Japan was American, asking him this question where
yeah.
the bathroom was.
He just pretty much makes fun of Japan. And then he says, next week, this is my dream team, George Steele and Junkyard Dog team up.
Thrilling.
Make sure to watch that.
And you know what? This show was great.
This was great.
This was fantastic.
It actually was.
We've been crapping on the show the whole time.
Yes.
But it's more in like a fun way.
Yeah.
This show was just
so fun.
One of the most fun things we've reviewed.
Yep.
Really, like, I wanted to watch another one.
Yeah,
afterwards.
This was fun.
I didn't know how good All-American was. I really thought that it was like Z-tier, like just junk. But Gene really makes it.
Gene carried this.
Some of these lines, we probably didn't even catch all of them for this review.
Right.
He was just on fire.
He was very funny. And it's a nice little glimpse into that in-between period after WrestleMania, before the big event, before, you know, the next WrestleMania.
Right. I think it's interesting about this show that you can see that people are, you know, rooting for people who are heels that
yeah,
would
that
eventually turn face very soon after this.
I agree with you. That was very strange.
It highlights how you said it's an in-between period.
It's an in-between period.
They have all this influx of talent,
mm-hmm.
and they're figuring out where they really belong in the face-heel spectrum.
I totally agree, Quinn, and I agree with you. It was a great show. It was fun.
Great show. Great to see some of these wrestlers in here that, you know, you don't really see a lot of these guys wrestle on the mainline shows once they get bigger.
Yeah, that's true.
So it was nice to see Jake. It was nice to see Brett just as you know, mm-hmm. beating up jobbers, doing their thing.
Paul Orndorff, nice to get a glimpse of him. Savage interview.
Yeah.
Gorilla and Bobby on commentary.
These are all the Good guys stuff. That you wanted to be on every episode of Superstars and weren't. Instead, you got Legion of Doom and who gives a shit?
Your favorite.
Yeah.
Well, folks, that'll wrap up our episode. Quinn, it was great talking to you as always about the world of retro wrestling.
Oh, it was fantastic.
And we want to remind you, folks, tweet at us at OVP Podcast. You can let us know if there's anything you want us to review. We will find it.
Yep, we will.
If not, Richard Land will.
Richard, you'll have assignments if they write into
exactly.
us.
Exactly.
We'll let you know.
Of course, you can email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, there's a lot of places to subscribe, iTunes being one of them, and we want to review, right?
Yeah, we definitely want to review on there, so just give us stars if you don't have the time to write, or write in a review if you feel you should.
Yep, and of course, you can always catch us at SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Player.fm.
Blueberry.
Tune in. The last time we're mentioning Tune In.
This is it. Tune In. This is your last time.
All right, folks. Have a great rest of your day. Great rest of your week. We will see you next Monday for more retro wrestling goodness. So long, folks.
See ya.
Hello. Hello. Luciano Pavarotti. Yes, sir. The world's premier tenor. Yes, this is Gene Okerlund from the World Wrestling Federation. Yes, trying to bring fans here in the World Wrestling Federation a little closer to the arts, if you will. Yeah, great voice. Is that your real voice or are your pants too tight? Well, I'm a bass myself, but I wear boxers. I understand, yeah. Luciano, what do you think this is, pal? PBS? Huh? Say, I understand the opera business is a little slow at this time of the year. At your weight, you may want to contemplate getting into professional wrestling. Yes. You know Salvatore Bellomo, Bruno San Martino, Paul Roma, Gorilla Monsoon? Oh, no, that is Italian, yes. Yeah. Your hometown, Luciano. Parts unknown. Never would have thought that. So keep it up. Say, you may want to go to an Ethiopian restaurant that I know. It worked. Arrivederci, forget it. Cases.
Will you stop?